Blog Talk Radio.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight. I might levitate right through the heaven's gate. Rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae. Simple and plain like Kanye, I heard him say it's murder one when he murder tracks. I'm a dirt bag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags. My first rap, catch Roberta Flack. I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like In Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect, all I need to check. Mike, check.
Another season has come and gone, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are, the season wrap-up episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Not quite the time for off-season discussion just yet. We will briefly discuss that idea, what's to come for the Memphis Grizzlies in the future. But first, we got to put a bow on the 2016 and 2017 Memphis Grizzlies, and that is the goal of our season wrap-up episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am one of your hosts, Joe Molinax. I am joined by my co-host, Grizzly Bear Blues contributor, senior features writer. He does a great job for us, and he's also done very well as my co-host these past few weeks, Mr. Brandon Connor. Brandon, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Just watching the playoffs, non-Grizzlies division.
Yeah, so I got to tell you, I'm just not as interested. I watch the games. I live in the D.C. area, and obviously the Wizards are playing the Celtics right now. So people are pretty fired up about that. But I haven't really watched a ton since the Grizzlies got eliminated. I watched a little bit of all four series, I should say. But I'm obviously, you know, I'm not an NBA blogger. Like, there are people out there that are specifically NBA bloggers, and God bless them. You know, that's the progression in this business. I like the Memphis Grizzlies. That's the team I follow. I'm a Grizzlies blogger. I like basketball. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to keep watching games. But when you don't have a horse in the race, when you don't have that ingrained emotional value, it's just not quite the same for me, at least. I still love the game. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, the Grizzlies are kind of what brought me back to NBA basketball anyway. Once the Grizzlies are out, yeah, I watch, but it's not nearly as must-see TV, at least for me.
Oh, man, the game last night between Washington and Boston was just fantastic, though. I mean, I don't see a lot of the Warriors games, like the Warriors-Jazz series. I'm probably going to see, like, 5 minutes of that series total just because I'm old. And so I end up going, like, those games start at like 9:30. I'm not going to be up for that unless it's like a weekend night and I wind up staying up late that night. So, but I mean, the John Wall, Isaiah Thomas, like, battle last night was just fantastic basketball. And it's been really amazing to see what Thomas has done, just like with the tragedy that he's dealing with the death of his sister. So that's been fun. So there's been some good storylines, but yeah, it's definitely not as fun once the Grizzlies are gone.
And you make a good point there. I think that the stories are still strong. You definitely have that, but at the same time, like you mentioned, I'm not staying up for Warriors Jazz. Like, I will stay up. I'm on the East Coast, so if the Grizzlies had made a series and they somehow advanced to the Western Conference Finals to play the Golden State Warriors, like, they would probably have a game that would start at 10:30 East Coast time. And I would stay up for that because I'm emotionally invested. I'd, you know, go to work tired the next day and do all that stuff. I'm not doing that for any NBA game. To be honest with you, I don't think I'd do that for, you know, a Washington Redskins game at this point. So I'm more emotionally invested. Obviously, writing for the blog, I'm more invested through SB Nation as well, covering the Grizzlies, for better or worse, for you wonderful folks tuning in and listening. Thanks for doing that all season long, by the way, and especially as we close out this 2016-2017 campaign for the Grizzlies. Ways to get in touch with us and with the show: you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Molinax, MULLINAX. You can follow Brandon on Twitter at Ball From Grace. You can follow our blog, SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues. Had a very successful April. Thank you all for your contributions to that. You can follow us at SBN Grizzlies, and you can also follow the podcast, of course, GBB Live, at GBB Live. The chat room is also open if you are listening to the live recording as we speak on a Wednesday night. If you're listening live, you can hop into the chat room if you have a question for me, Brandon, one of our guests this in the evening, or if you just want to send a shout out to somebody, chat room's open. You can do it in there. The rundown of tonight's show, Brandon and I are going to talk a little bit about Spurs Grizzlies, the way things kind of ended there in game six, how disappointed we were, that sort of thing, if we were disappointed at all. Segment two, we're going to welcome Mark King. He's our video content producer over at GBB. He also does similar work for SB Nation NBA now. Just another great example of GBBers getting opportunities to advance, survive in advance, so to speak. We'll talk to him about Marc Gasol's lack of aggression. To me, if there was any disappointment in that game six, it's the fact that Marc Gasol did not take a single shot in the fourth quarter. So that'll be one of the major talking points with Mark. And we'll also make predictions on the rest of the playoffs. We will be taking a hiatus after this episode of the podcast. We will return. I believe we have it earmarked as of right now, Wednesday, June 7th. That's tentative, though, so final schedules and all that stuff. I'm pretty sure the 7th is open. So that will be the next time we're back on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. So we'll do a prediction of who gets to the finals, who will win the finals, that sort of thing with Mark. Then in the final segment of the show, we'll talk with Greg Gaston of Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. I've had a great opportunity to be on middays a couple of times with him and Eli over the past year or so. It's always nice to bring Greg on the show. We'll talk to him about the Chandler Parsons contract. Chandler had an Instagram post, you know, again, the infamous, oh, he's in the gym shooting around. He must be working hard. And, you know, all the hate and angst that there is for Chandler Parsons. We'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about Grizzlies free agents, which ones played their last game in Memphis. Lots of interesting things to talk about. Again, this won't be heavy off season. There'll be a little taste of that, but this will be mostly just kind of wrapping up the season that was for the Memphis Grizzlies on this week's show. Brandon, I'm interested. Obviously the Grizzlies lose in six games. Not what anybody necessarily wanted when the season began. But as the season played out, as it became clear that Chandler Parsons was not going to be healthy really at any stage of the season, I held out hope probably longer than most people did. But considering that Chandler Parsons was not there the entire year, considering that Tony Allen was not there for the entire series, and he probably would have had a hand in at least slowing down Kawhi Leonard, Grizzlies lose game six. They lose by 7 points. It was a close game until the fourth quarter. We can talk about game six. Tell me what you were thinking as the fourth quarter kind of transpired, because the Grizzlies were in a position to possibly win that game six, and then it just kind of slipped away.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, they had their chances. They couldn't hit shots. And then, I mean, like you said, we talked about this, and like Marc Gasol had a good game one, and then just for the rest of the series, I know he hit the game winning shot in game four, but that was kind of like his big moment. He hadn't, like, it's mostly been Conley carrying – it was mostly Conley carrying the team for, like, the entirety of the series. And, like, that didn't change in game six. And you kind of thought, like, Mark would have, like, a little better sense of urgency there. Just – I don't know. It just felt like it fizzled out there at the end. They just couldn't find any offense. It's been – I mean, it's been a week. So it's just – it felt a little anticlimactic, to be honest. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Like, how did you feel like going into the fourth quarter? Did you feel like it just kind of like – I felt like it kind of faded at the end, and it felt kind of a little disappointing, like the crowd started emptying out. But how did you feel in terms of, like just how it – like the ending that – like I said.
It was almost like watching someone kind of just fade off into sleep is kind of the way I think about it. Like the Grizzlies had physically expended all the energy they could. Mike Conley had done everything he could. The Spurs still had something to give because they're a deeper, better team at that point. And I think Memphis was exhausted. And it was just kind of a letting up in that moment where I don't necessarily think they quit. I don't think Marc Gasol quit. I don't think that's the issue with Mark. I just think that they were spent. I don't think they had anything left to give. And the Spurs did. And that's kind of where I leave my take on that. To me, when you play the style that the Grizzlies had to play to be competitive in that series, think about the energy that was exerted in games three and games four at home, especially game four. Think about how much energy you have to invest to try to make comebacks that the Grizzlies tried to make in this series. Think about how much time and strength and overall effort it takes to grind against a team that is physically better than you, physically deeper than you. It's not an excuse, and I don't want it to sound like it's an excuse, but I had the Spurs winning in five games. So as I said on last week's show, anything after that to me was a success. The Grizzlies pushed a team that was clearly superior to them, had the best player on the court, arguably one of the best players in the world in Kawhi Leonard, arguably one of the greatest coaches of all time in Greg Popovich, against a rookie head coach in David Fizdale, and they found a way without two of their five best players to push that team to six games. To me, that is a massive success. So while I was disappointed that the season ended, as I always am when the season's over, because I follow the Grizzlies, I support the Grizzlies, I want them to win it all every year. But on one hand, it was almost a sense of relief. Like they don't have to, you know, they don't have to fight and claw and scratch. I mean, you could tell they were exhausted, and you could see that in the numbers too. I mean, the rebounding numbers. The Spurs had 46 rebounds in Game 6. The Grizzlies had 28. 46-28 was the rebound advantage. In Game 5, a game that was not as close as Game 6, the rebounding totals were, I'm pulling them up here, 31-34. So it wasn't that big of a disparity. To me, that's one. Rebounding is positioning. Rebounding is timing. Rebounding is just as much effort-based as it is, you know, just overall skill. I mean, rebounding is a skill, don't get me wrong, but it also takes effort. And I think that's a place where you miss Tony Allen in this series. He's one of the best rebounding wings in the entire NBA, at least this past season he was. So you lose that energy, you miss that energy, and you really just were exhausted. I mean, they are playing 8-man rotations. They had guys playing massive amounts of minutes. It just kind of faded away. That was my perspective watching it, obviously, from afar on television. They just seemed to not have anything left. It's like a car kind of running on empty, eventually skimming to a stop. That's kind of what it looked like to me.
Yeah, I mean, you had Conley played 45 minutes. I was just looking at it again. I think Conley and Gasol each ended up playing 45 minutes. So they looked, I mean,
and
they
should have
by the end of it. Yeah,
and by no means am I blaming David Fizdale for that. They needed to play those minutes. That's not even my issue. It's just you do what you have to do to try to win, and at some point the human body is not capable to do what you need it to do in that spot. You have to understand that. At least I try to understand that.
Right, and that you kind of saw that. Like, that's what happened with Westbrook in a couple of those games is, like, Donovan left him out
Absolutely.
There for, like, extended stretches, and then what he was good at doing, like, getting a little off topic, but Donovan was able to like manage Westbrook's minutes to keep him fresh. And that's the reason he was able to go like so nuclear in the fourth quarter. Like he would go on those like 10 and 15 point runs by himself. And so like, you see, like, that's just like, that's a, like I say that because like, that's a prime example of once they start like playing those sort of minutes, there's like diminishing returns. And so you're saying, well, we need to play Conley because what happens when he goes to the bench isn't good, but if you keep him in, then you're not getting as good a performance out of Conley. And so it's like, I don't blame Fizdale for playing that many minutes. Would have liked to, you just kind of wish that, I guess Conley had more to give. I don't know. That feels kind of unfair unfair to Conley. Yeah. So it's like,
to me,
you're putting a tough situation there. I just think they did what they could and just came up short.
And that's exactly right. I agree with that completely. I don't think Fizdale did anything necessarily wrong in that game six. Sometimes you just come up short. And the Spurs were the better team. They were the deeper team. We knew that going in. And the Grizzlies gave an admirable effort. But when you have an 8-man rotation, and that 8-man rotation includes Andrew Harrison, Wayne Selden, and Jamichael Green off the bench, we have to keep that in perspective here. Keep in mind who their rotation was. It was Mike Conley, James Ennis. You had Vince Carter, 40 years old. You had Zach Randolph, 35 years old. You had Marc Gasol. And then coming off the bench, you had two rookies, and Andrew Harrison and Wayne Selden, and Jamichael Green. That was the rotation those last few games. That was it. So what are we talking about here? That's kind of my take. When you take a step back and you look at what this team did, it's a no contest that it was a success. I'm amazed they did as well as they did. So I saw it as a team that had nothing left to give, skidding to the end. And if Chandler Parsons and Tony Allen were healthy, and this is a dangerous what if, and we'll talk about that throughout the offseason, I'm sure. But if you had those guys, I could see the Grizzlies winning that series. I really could. Now, I'm much more of a Chandler Parsons believer than others are, and others are more of a believer in Tony Allen than I am. But I think a combination of those two, the Grizzlies win that series in six or seven games. I really do think that's the case because they would have depth. You'd have Tony, you would have, you know, James Ennis and Vince Carter and Zach Randolph coming off the bench and being a bench unit that could compete with Pau Gasol and Patty Mills and those guys, not having to be overextended as starters. But we'll talk about that. We'll continue to discuss that as we welcome our first guest here. Again, GrizzlyBearBlues.com's great editor. He does a remarkable job with the videos for us. He also now does that for SB Nation NBA. A great example, as I mentioned earlier, of GB Beers getting great opportunities to do other bigger and better things. He's done a great job for us this season. We're excited to wrap up 2016 and 2017 with him. He is Mark Kay. Mark, I got to tell you, I thought I had side hustles. You know, I'm a coach, I'm a teacher, I do the blog. I thought I was a busy guy. You are the king of the hustle, my man. I got to give you credit, Mark. You are doing all sorts of stuff. How did the shop go today?
It went well. Our first day open was good. We had a lot of people down there. We're just getting ready for our big official launch party tomorrow down at 901 Shop downtown, and Adam Exler Beer is going to do some paintings and going to have some food and wine and beers. It's going to be a good time.
I'm 901 Shop, Grizz Essentials, doing video work for Grind City Media, doing the great stuff with us over the course of the series over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. You've been a busy man, and we appreciate your time, Mark, here. Again, we're wrapping up the season of Grizzly Bear Blues Live as it coincides and connects with the wrapping of the Memphis Grizzlies season. We were just talking about, I know you were on hold there for a little bit, the expectations being reached for this Grizzly Spurs series. I am of the opinion that this was a massive success. And maybe massive is too strong, but it sounds silly to say that in the span of a six game, you know, a loss in six games. But I just really think, and again, I've acknowledged that my love for Chandler Parsons is, you know, it's not even necessarily love. I just love what he could be for this team when he's healthy. Not having him, not having Tony Allen, that drastically impacted and lowered this team's ceiling. So the fact they were able to push a team as good as the San Antonio Spurs in a six-game series, essentially, pushing them to six in a seven-game series, making them earn it, to me, that is a success. I think they went above and beyond expectations, at least for me. Do you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think by most standards, we'd consider that a success. I mean, I don't think we ever thought we were going to get what we got. And so I think a lot of us thought it was going to be a sweep or at least a five-game series. We might win one at home. You know, to take into everything what we got the Fizdale rant, we got the crazy game four with just shot after shot, Mike Conley and Kawhi Leonard going toe-to-toe. So, you know, I think if you take that all into account, I think, you know, by most standards, I would consider it a success. You know, I mean, it was not what we'd hoped for, but I think what we thought in the beginning was different than what we thought in the end. I thought in the beginning we were going to just go in there and limp around and get swept, and it was going to be a very big disappointment. But you know, they hung in there. They played tough, and you know, I think I was just in a hold listening to you guys, and you brought up a very good point. You know, a lot of our starters in that series were supposed to be role players, and so once you move your what would be role players into a starter's minutes and they're playing 28 to 35 minutes a game, then you have to move your end of bench guys into role player situations. And a lot of times that just doesn't work out. I mean, it didn't really for the Grizzlies. You had a lot of guys playing big time minutes who had never been there before, weren't used to it. And that really showed on the road and in San Antonio. And you really saw guys like Andrew Harrison and Wayne Selden really shrink in the moment when they got outside of the home arena.
And again, but those are rookies, right? I mean, those are rookies.
Absolutely.
Those are guys
And there's no fault to that. I mean, I'm not blaming them at all. I'm just saying that's what happened. They did everything you would think they would do in that moment as a rookie. But like I said, those guys should have been your end of bench spot minute guys if you need them. You know, Vince Carter, Zach Randolph, like you said before I got on, those were your role players. Those are the guys who should have been coming off the bench for you in that 7, 8, 9 man role, not playing starter minutes. You know, how do you have Chandler Parsons and Tony Allen? Those are different situations.
The Spurs were essentially perfectly healthy, and I do think that part of that is the way Popovich manages minutes. I give credit to the Spurs. As I've said this entire show, they were the better team. That's not the disappointment. We knew that going in. For me, the disappointment of the series, Mark, was another gentleman named Mark Gasol. And it's not necessarily that he was a disappointment in terms of not playing well overall. I think he had a fine series, but in order for Memphis to compete and consistently compete, they needed him to have a tremendous series. They needed him to have a series like Mike Conley had. Mike Conley did above and beyond. There was nothing left in Mike Conley. He did everything that he possibly could have done to help his team win. I'm not sure we can say the same thing about Marc Gasol. And it's kind of been a building story over the span of the season. And I've heard different people talking about it. Jeff Calkins talked about it on our show a couple weeks ago. Last week, you know, Mark saying, oh, I haven't watched the Fizdale rant, Mark doing this, Mark doing that. The whole Moody Mark idea, as our own Chase Lucas likes to describe it, or we describe it with Chase, it really kind of disappointed me. And it drove home the point, I wrote an article of several weeks ago about how the Grizzlies are Mike Conley's team now. And Marc Gasol is just not that leader that David Fizdale wanted him to be, thought he would be. And in fairness to Mark, I don't necessarily think he's been anything that he hasn't been his entire career in Memphis. He's still obviously one of the best basketball players in the planet. He and Mike Conley are the clear leaders and core of what this team is going to be. But that key word there is leader. I think Mike Conley is a leader of men. And that's what you need in those playoff moments. I'm not convinced Marc Gasol is that guy. To me, the zero shots in the fourth quarter of a deciding game six is pretty much evidence of that, and that just adds on to what we saw from him, not just in this series, but this season. Marc Gasol, the leader, leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I mean, I think it is what the problem is it is time for us as fans, as media, as people who talk about the team, write about the team, it is time for us to adjust our expectations of what Marc Gasol should be, because Marc Gasol is not going to be aggressive. Marc Gasol is not going to want to take the last shot. That is not who Marc Gasol is. He is a very passive person. This is Mike Conley's team, and he defers to him at any moment. Whenever Mike's injured or not there, you see him earlier in the year in that 7-2 stretch, how aggressive Marc was. We were clamoring for that Marc. But as soon as Mike Conley came back from the back injury, it was back to the old, I'm going to defer to Mike Conley. So I think it's time for us to kind of adjust what we think of as Marc is going to be. Because how many years have we been saying, let's get that aggressive Marc? And how many years have we been going into the season and saying, Marc's going to step up and be a better leader with different coaches and different years and different seasons? And so it never materializes. And so I just don't think he's never going to be that guy. And I don't think we should expect it from him anymore, because it's never going to happen. Now, Fizdale definitely did the best out of everybody getting that out of him. And in the beginning of the season, it started that way. You could really see kind of a change. And then as the season wore on, as he got frustrated with how they were playing, and that happens, he just gets disinterested and gets disengaged. And I think you saw that in the Spurs series. He had a great first game. And then it didn't matter because they got blown out. And so for him, it's almost like, well, I had this great first game and it didn't even matter. No one else played. So why should I play? Why should I put in 32 points if no one else is going to? I know that's not probably what he thinks, but that's the perception that we all have looking at the game and looking from afar. And so, you know, you kind of saw it. That first game was great. And then the other games were just mediocre. And as your franchise player, you can't afford to be mediocre. at any point, especially in a playoff series, just like Mike Conley played like a superstar in that series, your franchise player in Marc Gasol has to play like a superstar, and he didn't, and they lost.
So, kind of building on that, you mentioned, like Fizdale did basically, like, went out of his way and did everything he could to try to get leadership Mark, like, to come out, and he still couldn't get it. So you think, like, moving forward, like, first of all, do you think next season Fizdale relies more on Conley as, like, as his captain and more of his vocal leader, since Conley seems more willing to take on that role? And then moving forward in terms of, like, building the franchise, do you think the way that Mark seems to, like, not necessarily clash, do you think that makes him, like, he's always going to mean a lot to this franchise because, you know, he grew up in Memphis and this is, like, where he is from. Well, not necessarily from, but he's, you know, like the video they did when he was a free agent, is he was Mark from Memphis.
Right.
But do you think, even given all of that, do you think that, like, sort of his leadership qualities and his sort of, I guess, his adversity to being more aggressive, do you think that makes him more expendable in the future?
You know, the first part, I think that, yeah, I mean, the short answer to the question is yes. Coach Fizdale should definitely look more towards Mike Conley to be his guy. I mean, and I think we saw that in the playoff series. I mean, a lot of those late game situations in that Kawhi Leonard Mike Conley face off was just a Mike Conley pick and roll. I mean, that's all it was, and Marc Gasol really wasn't doing anything. And one possession that Marc Gasol was asked to do something, it was literally Marc Gasol holding the ball while Mike Conley runs around and tries to get open off a screen. And after that, they went back to Mike Conley pick and roll. I mean, so I think you saw that on the court pretty much. And I think that probably Fizdale probably I think he would recognize that throughout the season and move towards Mike next season. As for the second part, you know, I think at a certain point, you know, the Grizzlies have a huge decision to make in the offseason anyway about this franchise and what direction they're going to go. But as you move forward as a franchise, at a certain point, you have to decide what are you getting, what is your return on your investment in the player you have? You know, what are the returns you're getting from what you're going to invest in that player, not only salary-wise, but in the community as well? At a certain point, you know, that does become an expendable thing where if you're not going to do what we need you to do, at a certain point, we need to try to move you and or get what we need in that position. You know, whether that's just a different type of center, whether that's a different type of power forward. If Mark's going to be that, you know, do they need to bring someone else? And so I think that was probably the acquisition they made with Chandler Parsons, is that he was going to be a pretty dominant ball on the ball kind of guy and pick and rolls and be a really dominant scorer. And Mark was going to be able to take more of a secondary leadership role. And so that's kind of yet to be determined. So I really think decisions will really have to be made in the next offseason with regards to Chandler and Mark. If Mark continues this way, I think you'll see a lot of people starting to, I wouldn't say turn on him because they're never going to turn on Mark, but there are a lot of people starting to ask that same question: is there something else out there that's better?
Right.
This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, joined by co-host Brandon Connor. We continue to discuss all things Grizzly and the end of the season here with Mark King, video content producer for GBB and SB Nation NBA. Follow him if you don't already do so, the king of side hustles at King_producer. The Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. Brandon and I were talking about this before the show began. I was surprised, but as Brandon put it, and we'll talk a little more about it, I probably shouldn't have been surprised, Mark. The question of the day was, what is the main storyline heading in to this offseason for the Grizzlies? Obviously, the Spurs series is now over. The Spurs are getting smoked by Houston at the moment, at least in terms of games. It was just one loss in the series so far. But the Grizzlies are now in their offseason. We just talked a lot about Chandler Parsons and the health of him alongside Marc Gasol and Marc Gasol's mental health, maybe, as far as leadership goes. The question was the biggest storyline for the Memphis Grizzlies this offseason: Chandler Parsons' health, free agency of T.A. and Zach Randolph, the cost of keeping Jamichael Green, or other. And a few people had, you know, how do we get rid of Chandler? How do we, you know, do that kind of thing? Somebody mentioned Vince Carter and whether or not he'll come back. I thought Chandler Parsons would win this with a bullet. You know, the players talked about it a good bit. Jeff Calkins has written about it pretty well in the commercial appeal. Over 200 people voted, so it's one of our biggest polls of the year, thanks to everybody who participated. 45% of the folks that voted said the free agency of Tony Allen and Zach Randolph is the biggest storyline going into this offseason. Chandler Parsons was second at 41%. So at least it was close, but I think that this is a great example of where the fan base still is with this franchise. They still see Tony Allen and Zach Randolph as those guys from 5 or 6 years ago, and they're not walking through that door anymore. 2011 Zeebo is gone.
Yeah.
And whatever they get in free agency, you know, if it's more than what they make now, it's overpaying for them. On the flip side, Chandler Parsons, who you have signed up, who is on the contract, who is clearly supposed to be your third best player, if he's not good, this Grizzlies team is not good next year, period. If Chandler Parsons is not healthy, you can make an argument because you have teams like the Minnesota Timberwolves. You have teams like the Sacramento Kings who are going probably continue to get better as time progresses here. They will miss the playoffs if Chandler Parsons is not healthy and able to contribute to this team because of the hindrance on the salary cap and because of the fact that they don't have draft picks. So you need Chandler Parsons healthy. To me, that's the biggest storyline. What do you think?
You know, I something you didn't mention is that is I think crucial and the biggest storyline of this season, off season for the Grizzlies is Jermichael Green. What he does and what happens with him is going to directly affect what happens with Tony, what happens with Zeebo, what happens with Vince, because you know he should get around 10 to 12 million on the open market. Which they can match, and they should match that. But all it takes is one team to screw you up. All it takes is a 76ers coming in and offering him $15 million a year, and then you can't match that. It would be crazy to match that. So, you know, if you bring Jermichael back, then you probably see Tony probably go and you bring Zeebo back. If you don't bring Jermichael back, then you have plenty of money to try and bring Tony back and bring Zeebo back, maybe Vince back. So, you know, a lot of what happens with Jermichael Green is going to dictate what happens with all the other players on the team because of the cap space is so limited this year. They don't have a whole lot to spend. And anybody thinks that we're going to do something drastically in free agency is just, it would surprise me if they signed anybody other than bringing a few people back and one player at the mid-level inception. And that's, I just don't see them do anything big if they bring Jermichael back. If they don't, you know, then that's kind of scary because, you know, the Grizzlies have never been able to have a good plan B in case something else doesn't work out. So if someone does offer Jermichael something crazy and the Grizzlies don't match, which they shouldn't match anything like that, then you're looking at plan B and there isn't a whole lot of plan Bs out there. And you're really looking at, you know, then the biggest storyline becomes Chandler Parsons because if Jermichael Green doesn't work out, then you really have to have Chandler Parsons to hit to be anything remotely relevant. So I think the biggest storyline for the Grizzlies is definitely Jermichael Green. What happens with him? Because what happens with him is going to affect what happens with everybody else as far as just because of what the money that have tied up everywhere else. I think next year they're going to have $83 million tied up in three players, which is a large percentage of your cap in three players. And if one of those players, i.e. Chandler Parsons, is not healthy, then you're really screwed. You know, and the people out there that love Tony Allen, I think at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? I know that people love Tony Allen, and I love Tony Allen as much as anyone else, but Tony is never – he's not healthy for the playoffs. He hasn't been healthy for the playoffs in several years, and he continues to not be healthy. So at a certain point, you have to understand – is it worth it? And I think it is, but I think he has to be at a very, very certain price point, at a very low level, and he has to understand that his role will be diminished next year. And I don't know if he can do that.
What
go ahead, Brandon.
Do you have a certain price point that you'd say, like if someone else offered Tony a certain amount, like you'd say, that's too much, we can't match?
I mean, I think for Tony, I'd have to look at the numbers and see what the cap sheet is. But for Tony, I think anything above, you know, six million is too much. I mean, I think he's making it was $5 million this year. If you go anything about $5 million, what he's making this year is too much for Tony Allen. He's a 36-year-old shooting guard that can't shoot, and he's a defensive specialist that he's not really as good as he was on defense as he has been. So you look at those type of things, and it's kind of, you know, granted he's a veteran, he's been there, he knows, but that's only worth a certain amount of money. So I think you're probably looking at getting him around $3 to $4 million a year.
If you can get Tony Allen for $4 million a year, I think you do it. I agree with that completely. And I think Zach Randolph would be better suited around that $8 million, you know, kind of mid-level exception sort of deal.
Exactly.
You know, those would be essentially hometown discounts for those guys. But if you could get them to accept those deals, plus Jamichael at your $10 to $12 million rank, you know, I think that you've got a shot at making it all fit and having kind of your cake and eating it too. But it would still be tight, and I think that you'll still probably see them make some sort of a move, maybe moving on from Brandon Wright or Jarrell Martin to try to free up a little bit more for that cap space. But that's for another conversation for another podcast. We're finishing up here with Mark King, video content producer for GBB and SB Nation NBA. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already, @King_producer. All right, guys, the playoffs are still going on. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we're taking a break after this show until about June 7th. So the finals will be in full swing when we come back on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. So let's pick some playoff series here. Let's start with the Boston and Washington series, because that's the one that most people think is the most fun. I'm going to go a little bit Homer here in my D.C. area where I live. Not Homer in terms of who I cover with the Grizzlies. I'm going to say the Wizards are going to win this series in six. And I know Boston is up 2-0. I get it. But I think the Wizards will come home. They'll have a little bit of home cooking. They'll pick off game five. They'll wrap it up in six, and they'll be Wizards moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. What do you think, Brandon?
I really like John Wall. And so I tweet with the guy who runs Bullets Forever a lot, and I listen to Kornheiser. So they cover the Wizards, you know, a lot more. So they're one of the teams I'm more familiar with. So I've been cheering for them. I kind of originally thought that they would win in six, but then I kind of revised that prediction down to Boston after I didn't think Markieff was going to be able to play after that ankle injury, so I thought that was going to be a problem for him. I can't remember if I picked Boston in five or six. I'd still give Boston an edge. I'd say Boston in seven. I think Washington will play better at home. I think they'll push them. I think it should be but those two teams play really close to each other. You've got Wall and Isaiah Thomas. And I think that's going to be a really good – it's been a really good series so far, and I think it's going to continue to be good. And I'd like to pick the Wizards just because I like the Wizards and a lot of their guys. But I'm going to go Boston in seven on that one.
What about you, Mark?
I'll stick with the Celtics. I don't think that the Wizards can figure out how to contain Isaiah Thomas. They're going to have to start doubling him, and I don't think they're going to be willing to do that to contain him. So I definitely say the Celtics in probably six.
The other Eastern Conference series, that's Cavaliers and Raptors. Probably don't need to break that down too in depth. I'm going to go Cavs in five. Brandon?
Yeah, I picked Cavs in six, and so I mean, that's probably giving the Raptors too much credit at this point. What about you, Mark?
I would say the Cavs, yeah. I mean, that's easy peasy right there. I don't know if there's any real shot they have.
No real shot, I would agree. And we can,
like, LeBron James had 38 – he had, like, 38 points on 14 shots, I think was the stat, like, tonight. Like, they can't stop him.
He's the best player in the world. No, I mean, it would be fun to watch Kawhi try to stop him, but I don't see that happening. So it'll be a Cavs, sounds like Boston series, according to you guys. I still have faith in the Wizards. But Cavs-Boston is possible in the East. Out West, we'll start with the easy one out there, too. I mean, Warriors in four or five, right? I'm saying Warriors in four. I just don't see the Jazz being able to compete with what Warriors can throw out there. So I'm going Warriors in four with a sweep.
I'll give the Jazz the benefit of a doubt and say Warriors in five. Mark?
I would be surprised if they won a game, if the Jazz won a game. I mean, I would be really surprised. Sorry.
I've been a Jazz hater for a while.
Warriors in four. I love.
Yeah,
Joe,
I'm a noted
Joe
jazz.
Anti-jazz.
I love.
I
jazz
I supported the Clippers
franchise.
In that Game 7 over the Jazz.
Ooh.
So.
Ooh.
Yeah, I tell you, I felt dirty. I took at least 3 showers. So we've got the Warriors advancing, and then the last one, which is supposed to be a fun series, but Houston can beat the brakes off of the Spurs in Game 1, Rockets and San Antonio. I've got Houston in 6, Brandon. What do you got?
Yeah, I picked Houston in 6, and it, like, I mean, I don't think every game's going to be like it was Game 1. I mean, that was just ugly, but I just don't see how San Antonio, with their personnel, is going to be able to, like, defend what Houston wants to do, and it's worked so far. So I'm sticking with Houston in 6. Mark, what do you think?
You know, I would be tempted to say that Houston in 6 as well, but I think when you have Greg Popovich on your sidelines, you get that earns you an extra game. So I'm going to say Houston in 7.
Houston in 7. So we're thinking Houston. Go ahead, Brandon.
Why does Popovich has like something against Dwayne Dedman or something. He just like even after he recovered from the food poisoning, he's been like hasn't seen like hardly any playing time. I don't know why he won't play Dedman more. I just don't understand that.
Well, Dedman's about to get paid by somebody in the offseason. I think that is a safe bet. It'll be interesting to see which one of those two makes more money, Dwayne Dedman or Jamichael Green. One of the many stories that we'll keep an eye. I lean towards Dedman too, but that could be something we talk about.
That is an easy answer. Jamichael Green can't play defense very well.
I think that's probably true. Mark, thank you so much for all your work for Grizzly Bear Blues this year. And next week, you will have a 5-part series dropping on GBB, one post a day, taking a look at the Grizzlies offseason. That'll be great. So make sure you're keeping an eye out for that next week. Mark, thank you so much for your time. Congrats on all of the success on your various ventures, and hopefully things keep going well with 901 Shop and elsewhere.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There he goes. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mark King, video content editor for GBB and SB Nation NBA. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already do so, @King_producer. Before we move on to this next segment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinex and Brandon Connor, I do want to give a special shout-out to the guy who just left, Mark King, who is the founder and creator, great sponsor of GrizzlyCentrals.net, tremendous Grizzlies gear, subscription service. Get ready for next season right now. You know, there's plenty of opportunities for you to stay geared up as the offseason hits. GrizzEssentials.net, you enter in your sizes, you find your subscription box size that you want, you go with that, and they really hook you up very nicely. I love their gear. Make sure you're going to GrizzEssentials.net, terrific sponsor of GBB Live, for all your Grizzlies gear needs. Our final guest, Brandon, before we get fully into the offseason in June, final guest helping us wrap up the season that was for the Memphis Grizzlies. He does a tremendous job over on Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. I'm a big fan of his. He does middays and with Eli, his co-host. I've had a chance to be on their show a couple of times. They do great work. They're great guys. Excited to have him back on the program. He's officially a friend of GBB Live. His name is Greg Gaffney. Greg, I know it just started, but how's the offseason treating you, sir?
My gosh, I'm rested and relaxed after all these days off from Grizzlies basketball. Took a couple of vacations. I'm ready to get the season started again now, guys. There's a lot to get to here in this offseason. I call this the most important offseason in Grizzlies history. A lot of decisions, as you guys know, that have to be made about this roster, about this future, the battle between the business ops and the basketball ops and decisions. So there's no rest for the weary, not at all. I think this offseason is going to be quite entertaining, and especially when we move around the draft and then obviously July 1st into free agency.
Plenty of questions. There's no doubt about that. And I do think this is an important offseason for them as they continue that, and credit to Kevin Leip, who kind of called it before the rest of us did, that attempt to transition while still remaining relevant. And the Grizzlies are obviously still very relevant in the NBA, but at the same time, they are attempting to transition. Chandler Parsons was meant to be that bridge, and I know you and Brandon will talk more about Chandler here in a moment, because when I talk about Chandler, I just get too fired up, and it's best for my co-host to handle that question. But when it comes to the offseason, the Spurs showed the weaknesses of the Grizzlies. Obviously, they lacked depth. Part of that was health-related, but the Grizzlies just weren't deep enough to handle the Spurs. The Grizzlies really struggled defending the three-point line at times. A great example of that is in Game 6, the Spurs shot, seven threes, 7 out of 20. They made 14 threes in Game 5. They made 10 threes. The Spurs did not shoot worse than – they only shot worse than 39% from three once in the entire series. That's not very good. They shot over 400% – or they shot over 40% three of the six games. They shot 52.6% from three in Game 1, 41.7% in Game 3, and then 50%, 14 for 28, in Game 5. So obviously the Grizzlies have issues defending the three, depth, lots of things that need to be fixed. Oh, and by the way, they don't have any draft picks really or cap space to fix those problems. So how does this team get better after the Spurs showed those weaknesses?
Well, let me be honest here, because I thought the Spurs would wax the Grizzlies. I thought they would win in four, maybe five. The fact that the Grizzlies took it to six to me was a little bit unexpected. So even with everything you said, Joe, and no question, everything you say is the truth. You speak the truth. I still thought they played better than what I expected. Now you throw in the fact that San Antonio is more their style. And when you see what Houston did to San Antonio in Game 1, although one game does not make a series, you look at that and you go, how the heck can the Grizzlies even hang with a Houston or a Golden State or some of these young and up-and-coming teams with all this youthful talent? And it's really hard to find encouraging signs for the future. The one encouraging sign, obviously, is they have a star in the making in Mike Conley. 10 years in the making, but I think Mike Conley is finally getting that recognition. The comments that Greg Popovich has made about Conley and other people. So they have their anchor. They have Mike Conley leading the way, but you have to add a lot of pieces. The problem is there's not a lot of opportunities to add those pieces because, as you said, there's no draft picks, and they've struggled in the draft, as we know. There's not a lot of viable parts to be dealt, although there can be some moves made if they so please to do so. The problem is, guys, I think the management, by watching them play six games with the Spurs, by taking it maybe even more than most people thought, that it's going to encourage them to keep it the same way. Add some pieces, don't get me wrong, and continue to develop under Fizz's system, which is a little bit away from the grit and grind. We saw at the end of the year and in the postseason, they went back to it, basically. I know because of the matchup with the Spurs, but it was Zebo down low, back to the basket. It was still grit and grind. And I think that because of the investment they've made financially in Parsons, they're going to keep it the way it is for the most part and try it one more time next year. Now, I don't think everybody's back, and I still think there's a possibility of a deal, maybe Brandon Wright being shipped out for the right pieces in return. But I would not be shocked if Zebo's back. I know Fizz loves Carter at 40 years old. Insanity could be back. Who knows about T.A.? And Jamichael Green, who I'm on the fence on, to be honest with you, not as a person. I think he's absolutely a terrific human being. I've had a chance to sit down and do a 30-minute interview, and I love the guy. But I'm on the fence with him as the player, maybe the heir apparent to Zebo. They got to make a decision on him. I think probably out of those four guys, three of them are back. So I think you're going to see a lot of what we had this past season, and then it all depends on Parsons' health, whether or not we see Fizz's idea for changing the way he wants to play. We'll see if it comes to fruition with a healthy Chandler Parsons.
And I do think that is something that is out there that continues to permeate the fan base. And I do think that there's fans, Greg, that are concerned about this. I think I talked about with you guys the last time I was on your show about this. If the Grizzlies had had success in this series, which I think I agree with you, I said that in the earlier segment, this is a big success to me, the fact they pushed it to six games against the Spurs, considering they had Andrew Harrison and Wayne Selden Jr. playing massive minutes for them, Vince Carter and Zach Randolph starting when they should have been coming off the bench if everybody was healthy. So to me, this was a successful series, even though they didn't win. But does that really kind of get into the fan base and say, hey, Tony would have changed everything, and hey, Zach Randolph, he can still play and he can still start in this league? Our question of the day is a great example of that. Over 200 people voted in our poll, and the majority of them, or the most of them, said that they think the free agency of Tony Allen and Zach Randolph is the most important storyline this offseason, ignoring, or not necessarily ignoring, but passing Chandler Parsons' health. So does this success, quote unquote, and I'm sure we'll catch flack for saying a losing playoff series is a success, but you got to look at the roster and who they were playing, in my opinion. Is it okay if they do run it back? Because obviously their hands are tied a little bit. They have the cap space in terms of being under the luxury tax to bring three of those four guys back. But is that worth it? Is it worth bringing them back, hoping Chandler Parsons is ready, and then just, you know, rolling the dice? Or do you just say our best option is keeping this group of guys together another year or maybe even two?
Yeah, that's the big question right there. Which direction do they want to go in? Think about this, guys, and you got to think about it from also a business standpoint. We had three home games in the playoffs. Those three games were – it was just electric at FedEx Forum, as you guys know. Every time you play at home in the playoffs, it's absolutely electric. And are you willing to possibly give up that? Now, who knows what will happen, but I would say – that there's a good chance if you want to make some changes, you may have to take a step backwards to try to move two steps forward. Who knows if it will ever be as good as it's been for the 7-year run. But what are you going to do? Roll out guys when they're 40 that are not named Vince Carter? I mean, keep this ball rolling. But from a business standpoint, they want to do that. They certainly want to do that. They want to get as far as they can in the postseason, but they want to make sure they get to the postseason. What happens in a small market like Memphis when the team goes 2-3 years without going to the postseason? So right now, everybody's in love with this 7-year run of getting to the postseason. Now, there are fans who think with their head, and there's fans that think with their heart. You talked about that poll you had out there, the most important decisions. Well, of course they're going to say that because it's Tony Allen and it's Zebo. It's part of grit and grind. It's part of the culture. They're part of the fabric of the community. But really, let's be honest, where this team goes next year is dependent upon Parsons. They put a lot of money into that guy. He's going to make $23 million next year. He's going to make $24 million the year after. He's going to make $25 million the year after that. They are invested heavily in this guy. He's the guy that was going to make the difference, right? Stretch the defenses, hit the perimeter shots, a big guy that can get off his shot against anybody. So he's the most important part. But from your head, from your heart, it's, oh, we don't want to lose Zebo. We don't want to lose Tony Allen. But this front office, and by the way, I'm still not sold that everybody is back intact in the front office. I think there still could be a move there. But what you have to look at is it worth taking a chance to fall out of that playoff where you won, where you've been in 7 years in a row, take that step back to try to move forward, or do you just keep rolling with this? And I think I don't want him to do it personally because I'm tired of get to the playoffs, losing the first round. But I'm not some – I'm a fan in the sense that I cover the team and I want them to do well, and I love interviewing the players and I enjoy covering them. But I'm not some guy who goes to the games and wears Grizzlies shirts and has pom-poms and rah-rah. So I understand those fans. They are diehards. They're in every city with every sports entity out there. So I understand them not wanting to lose what they've had. But I would rather see them make some moves, cut some ties with guys that have been around, try to put something together for Brandon Wright, even possibly look at a huge package for Marc Gasol. They have to start thinking about the future. And I'm not talking about another year in the postseason where they lose in the first round.
Just to kind of go back to what you touched on with Parsons, I mean we've kind of discussed this, and this is a 4-year max contract. This is just the first. We've gone through the first year. He hasn't been able to play. we don't know what's going to happen with regard to, like, his surgery that he just had, how he's going to come back. But right now, just based on what we've seen and what the expectations are for not just next year but the next 3 years of the contract, would you call – are you ready to call the Parsons signing a bust, or is it still too early for that?
It's too early to call it a total bust because we got to give him another year. We have to see what happens after rehabilitation. He was on his Instagram today account talking to the Grizzlies fans, basically making a statement that he is going to rehab his tail off. He's going to be ready to go. There's brighter days ahead. He looks forward to a great season. So, and yes, this year was an absolute disaster with Chandler Parsons. Right now, that looks like an absolute bust, spending $94 million for a guy who's injured. But I think we do have to give him the benefit of the doubt, at least for another season. He comes back out there next year, is still 50% of what he can be, and they throw him out there for 20, 25 minutes, which was an absolute disaster this year. Or even worse, he's not ready to go. He's not ready to play from the get-go. He struggles all year. Then you're halfway through the deal, and you could say, absolutely, this is a bust. But I think, guys, we got to give it – we got to at least give it another season. It was really, really, really bad. It put him behind the eight ball, the team. It certainly put Fizz behind the eight ball in the way he wanted to coach. But with three more years of guaranteed money, he's not going anywhere. They have to at least hope, wish, pray that he comes back healthy, and then we'll reevaluate after next season.
This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Go ahead, Brandon.
You mentioned kind of a possible front office shakeup. Is there anyone in particular that you think might not be back next year?
Well, I don't have any inside information, and I wouldn't be surprised if everything is back to normal, because Chris Wallace is one of the most popular guys in this community, and he's done an awful lot, and I think he's a terrific guy, and he does a lot of good things for the Grizzlies and a lot of good things for the community. But I can easily see them going in a different direction there. If you look at the personnel moves that have been made over the years, I mean, they've hit on a few. It's more like he has hit, and I'm talking about Chris. Now, it's not just Chris's decision, and then, of course, there was the tenure where Levian was in there, and Chris was not even a part of it. But he's hit on some, I don't want to call them reclamation projects, but he's taken some chances with guys. When Zach Randolph came in, people thought, oh, my gosh, what are you doing here, right? The Jailblazers, Zach Randolph has become a pillar of the community. He hit on that one. He hit on the Tony Allen. He's hit on some moves. He really has. What has been a disaster has been the drafts, other than Conley. I mean, you think about the last 10 years. It's been an absolute disaster. He's only part of that equation, Chris, so I want to put this all on his shoulder. But obviously – now, under Para and with Levian out of there and with this new group with the body and company, Hollinger, it's still Wallace making big decisions, although it's a group decision on Chandler Parsons. So it depends on how ownership wants to look at that Parsons situation. Does he look at it as right now futile, that there's no way this guy can come back from an injury and I spent all this money? Oh, maybe heads have to roll. Or does he look at it like, listen, things happen, injuries happen, we'll be fine, he'll rehabilitate himself, he'll be ready to go. Let's keep this team together. Let's try to keep as many guys as we can. We had a good run. It was a good series against San Antonio. We didn't have Parsons. We didn't have TA. So I don't know. I can't get into his head, but I would think that he may look at it that way. But what I'm saying, guys, is, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a move made within the front office. But then again, I don't think it's something that's inevitable.
We're chatting with Greg Gaston at Greg_Gaston. He is of Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. Does a terrific job on middays. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already. Like I said, at Greg_Gaston here on GBB Live with us. Occam's Razor is the general idea that often the simplest explanation when you're facing, two choices or multiple choices, the simplest one is usually the one that's going to happen. And the simplest thing for Memphis to do, Greg, is, as you kind of alluded to with Brandon there, is the idea that they kind of run it back, because that's the easiest thing that fits with their philosophy of staying under the luxury tax, going over the salary cap, They're willing to do that. They're not willing to go over the luxury tax. At least historically, they haven't been. So you're looking at the four Grizzlies free agents: Jermichael Green, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Vince Carter. Jermichael is a restricted free agent. The other three are unrestricted. So that means Memphis will, as long as they put an offer sheet on Jermichael, they'll have an opportunity to match whatever another team offers Jermichael.
Right.
Which of those four, and you mentioned earlier that you think they can maybe even retain as many as three, which of those four Grizzlies free agents has played their last game as a Memphis Grizzly?
I would say out of those four, I would lean toward Tony Allen. Tony Allen has been a stalwart for them, and he's been really the god, right, the grindfather. He's the creator of grit and grind, and everything starts with him. But, guys, the injuries are starting to mount up with Tony Allen. And even when he was in there healthy, he was not the defensive stopper that he once was. You couple that with his real inability to be in the flow offensively and maybe even his liability, I would think that there's a strong possibility it's Tony. Now, Tony, as he said in his exit interview, he's not trying to break the bank. He made $5 million this past year. So it's not like you have to pull back the Brinks truck and unload it on his front lawn. But I would think Tony is my lead out of those four. Now, personally, to me, it's all about what Jermichael Green can get out there around the league. If Jermichael Green can get an offer that's a pretty hefty offer, if I'm the Grizzlies, I wouldn't match, but I think they like the guy an awful lot. The reason I'm a little suspect on Jermichael Green is I like the ability to hit the threes, stretch the court. He's a true stretch four, but we have seen when he has to go up against the big power forward or maybe even take the center in times when Mark's not on the court, man, he gets manhandled. So he's not Z-Bo. He's not Z-Bo. And I think there's only one Z-Bo. But he does a lot of good things as well. That's why he's going to get paid. But I'm not sold on him. So as long as the money isn't too extravagant, I have no problems with them bringing him back. Vince is an interesting deal because he wants to play two more years. He's 40 years old. For being 40 years old, he was one of the most consistent Grizzlies players all season long. And it looks like Fizz just absolutely loves him. He always talks about his work ethic, that he's lifted weights after the game, and what's not to love about a future Hall of Famer. So I think there's a chance that they'll retain Vince Carter. And then you got Z-Bo, who made $10 million last year. Z-Bo is still an important part of this organization, but back as a sixth man, not as a starter, especially with what Fizz wants to do with his offense, because you can't run that style with Z-Bo. So if I were to rank them, I would think they probably re-sign Z-Bo. That would be number one. Jermichael Green would be two. And, of course, they can't pay Z-Bo a ton, so that could factor in what Jermichael Green obviously gets offered. But I would think those two. Then it comes down to, they want Vince and his leadership for a couple more years, or do they want to retain Tony? I would say three out of those four guys stay on this roster for next year.
And I think signing Zach and Jermichael makes Brandon Wright expendable. And I think that moving
right.
that contract, mm-hmm. maybe for a couple of future second rounders, maybe you find somebody like a Portland Trailblazers who you tag, Brandon Wright and a couple of second rounders to Portland, and they send you one of their, I think they have four first round picks this year. So maybe you get a late first round pick from them in exchange for, one of the bevy of second rounders that Memphis has in the future drafts, and Brandon Wright, and that frees up some cap space for you that allows for you to bring back, those three wings or those two bigs and one of those wings, plus maybe gives you wiggle room under the mid-level exception. I mean, they're going to be playing cap, toe of the line the entire offseason. If they're really trying to stay, like we've been talking about, stay competitive while they're transitioning, it would make sense to bring back Zach and Jermichael and one of those two wings, because all of those guys can still play. But you still need to be able to have room to work with trying to bring somebody in from the outside on that mid-level exception. And I think that could be a Sean. Go ahead.
No, you're right, Joe. You're right. I just wanted to kind of jump on what you're saying here, because I think Brandon Wright is expendable. He's not the guy that –
especially with Deontay Davis.
Good point. But I don't think he's the guy that they thought they were getting because he has not been able to stay healthy. And then he questions why he wasn't getting more playing time. In fact, he was taken out of the rotation in the series against the Spurs. Brandon Wright, I think, can be a pretty valuable piece for a team that's looking for a big that can run the floor. But again, when you're the other team making a deal, it takes two to tango, and here's an often injured guy. So how much can you get for it? But I think there's a possibility you could package one of those young guys, maybe a Jarrell Martin, who I don't think is in their future plans. You could possibly put something together there and make a deal, as you said, for a pick. I don't know if you can get into the first round. I don't know. But I know they're hard-pressed right now, obviously, without having a draft pick. But I think they would love to get into this draft because it's a deep draft. So you have that possibility. Maybe a little package there, which would include Brandon Wright. Remember, guys, they're also going to bring in the kid. What is it, Gorich? They're going to bring him in. And
Rodney,
is that his name?
Yes, Rade.
Yes.
Well, I call him by the first name because the last name is confusing. Rade will be coming.
I call him by the last name because I can pronounce that better than the first name. But yeah, so Gurch is the guy that they'll bring in, and he's supposedly a good 3-point shooter. He's got good size at like 6'9". So you got to figure he's going to be a part of this roster next year, and then they got to decide: are they set now because he played a couple of good games in the postseason? Are they set now with Andrew Harrison as the backup and then Wade Baldwin, who did not develop well in his first year? Is that what they're going to go into the season with, which was a question mark every single day we talked about having the backup point guard? In fact, the numbers were crazy in the postseason against the Spurs. Mike Conley off the floor for, was it 60 minutes and the Grizzlies were outscored by 66 or vice versa? He was off the floor for 60 and they were out, or 66 and they were outscored by 60. Whatever it was crazy numbers when Mike Conley was off the floor. So even though Harrison did a couple of nice things in the postseason, are they sold on the fact that that's going to be your backup going into next year? So that's another thing they got to worry about and they got to address along with these other questions that we've already brought up.
It really is going to be fascinating to watch play out. Obviously, just a little taste there as we approach the offseason. The season just ended about a week or so ago for these Memphis Grizzlies. We're finishing up here with Greg Gaston on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by myself, Joe Mullinex, and Brandon Connor. We'll get you out of here on this, Greg. All things considered, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies season, the ups and downs, the successes, the failures, was this, and I think you can separate the two between postseason and season, would you deem, and again, the Grizzlies only won one more game this year than they won last season when they were 42-40 and had all those awful injuries, the season that when it ended against the Spurs, everybody kind of breathed a sigh of relief. You know, thank God that's over. We don't have to watch that anymore. This year it's a little bit different because people enjoyed watching Conley and the team, you know, kind of rose above expectations considering the context of the circumstances. Was this season and postseason a success to you, Greg?
I'm a teacher who likes to grade very strictly. So I'm stricter with the grades. I'm harsher with the criticism. No, I don't think it was a success in the regular season. I'm with Marc Gasol. They should have won more games. They should have been a higher seed, and maybe they wouldn't be in that predicament that they were facing the number two seed. Yes, they played against the better teams and won some games and did a pretty good job against the upper echelon. But to lose some of the games they did, to lose to the Lakers, I think, a couple of times, to Brooklyn, to the Knicks once. These are games that come back to haunt you in the end. And you had Marc Gasol back pretty much for the whole season. He missed, I think, a six-game stint there. But his foot was fine. He was good. Mike Conley missed a little bit earlier in the year with the back, but for the most part, he was healthy. They didn't run 28 players in like they did last year. And as you said, Joe, they won one more game than that. So I think overall, yes, Parsons was a disaster. It put him back. It dropped Fizdale back to what he wanted to do. And then they, in the end, they're playing more pure grit and grind. But again, he was a new piece to the equation. This is a team last year, again, with 28 different players, an NBA record, that won one less game than this team this year. I would say it was a disappointment. I think they should have been up towards 50 wins and not being a 7 seed, being a 4 or 5 seed. To get that 4 or 5 game, I think they could have won at least one playoff series and probably got knocked out in the second round. But by being in the 7th hole, they had to play San Antonio, and they were fading at the end. If there was another 10 games left in the season, gosh, Portland probably would have caught them. They probably would have been in 8th place. So I would say that's disappointing. The postseason, I would say, and again, it's weird to say it was successful because you lost. So I'm not going to say successful, but I think it was better than I thought it would be. I thought they competed very nicely against a San Antonio team with a lot of talent. I thought they went toe-to-toe against them for the most part. Joe, you pointed out some issues to start this segment that I think are absolutely right on. But I think even with all that said and not having the guy that you want in there for defensive purposes, especially against Kawhi, Tony Allen, not having him, I think they did well. So I would say they succeeded at least in playing competitively against the 2 seed in the postseason. But I think the regular season, how it ended, not getting the wins they needed to move up in seeding, was a disappointment.
There were some disappointments. There were some excitements. There was ups and downs, like we talked about. That's a typical season of Memphis Grizzlies basketball. Greg, thank you so much for your time. It is much appreciated. Get some rest this offseason, man. Try to take a nap or something. I know the Redbirds and all that are continuing, but now that the Grizzlies have died down for the summer, they're hibernating for the offseason. It's a chance for us to catch our breath, at least until NBA draft stuff picks up. Oh, wait, they don't have a draft pick. So maybe they'll find a way to trade in or buy into the second round or something.
Yeah, my prediction is that they will find a way to get into at least the second round of the draft. We'll see if that prediction comes true. But, guys, keep up the great work. You're really doing a super job with the podcasts and the website. It is fantastic. I always appreciate you guys having me on. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Absolutely. Appreciate that, Greg. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Greg Gaston of Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. Kind words for us there. He does a great job over at Sports 56. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already, @Greg_Gaston. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, joined by my co-host, Brandon Connor. And Brandon, before we wrap up, I do want to get your take on a question that I asked Greg there at the end. With the free agent one, because I think that's fascinating, and it really is kind of connected to what their plans are for the front court, because there's no denying that the front court is pretty crowded. I mean, 3 of their best 6 players are bigs: Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Jamichael Green. There's just not room for Brandon Wright anymore. So if you decide to bring back Zach and Jamichael, to me it doesn't make sense to have Brandon Wright on this roster. So do you think they bring back both of those guys, Zach and Jamichael, and do you think that results in a Brandon Wright deal potentially trying to get into perhaps the second round of this draft? Or like I mentioned, Portland has like 4 first-round picks. Maybe you can sneak into the end of the first round or early second if somebody has multiple second-round picks, shipping out that Wright contract, which would give you a little bit more room to perhaps bring back Jamichael, Zach, and Vince or Tony.
Yeah, right now I kind of see them like the thing, like we kind of talked about, like what other teams will offer Jamichael, just kind of like in a vacuum sort of, but it's like the mechanics of restricted free agency don't necessarily play out like that. And so I was tweeting with Hardlicka today kind of about that, and I saw he mentioned it with someone else, like the way, like, there's regular free agents are going to be able to, like during the moratorium, negotiate their contracts. And so the unrestricted free agents will kind of set, they won't necessarily set the market, but they'll fill a lot of holes where Jamichael might have been a better fit. And so that's going to like drive down his asking price. And so I still think you're looking probably, like, I would be shocked if he got, like, I think 10, 11 is probably about where I see it, like his ceiling being in terms of price. So I don't think that's going to be like, it's not going to be a massive overpay. I think it's worth keeping, because if you don't keep him, like Wright hasn't necessarily, if I think you bring him back, then you're probably keeping Zebo, And then Allen's still sort of a wild card. Just the way that they used Wright this year and the way that he wasn't really used in the playoffs just makes me think that if you're bringing Jam back, then you really can't play him with – like, you're going to have to play him with Zeebo, and that didn't really work during the regular season. So if you bring back Jamichael, then you're kind of forced to move him. You're probably looking to move Jarrell because he hasn't really shown any sort of growth either. And so I think those two guys are kind of the guys you're looking to move. And maybe I really don't know what they're going to do with the draft. I kind of think maybe they will try to trade back into the second round, but I don't know what you're going to get there anyway. I don't know if it's worth it or like I haven't even looked at like I'm not a scout, so I haven't really looked at anybody who's available other than like the top, like the big names that I know of, like De'Aaron Fox and Markel Fultz. Like, I've seen some of those guys, but I don't really know what they might go after kind of in the second round if they do that trade. But right now, I just think the logical thing to do is see what Jamichael gets. If it's not outrageous, match, bring Zeebo back, maybe bring Tony back if the asking price is right, and then try to move on from Wright and Jarrell.
And if they find a way to do that, and again, Matt Hardlicka will have free agency, salary cap. He's our resident expert on that. But from my basic understanding, if they found a way to move off of Jarrell and Brandon and trade those two players for picks, essentially, say maybe you send Jarrell for like a 2018 second rounder, send Brandon Wright for two second rounders, or somebody gives up a first for some reason for him, and it's down the road, and you count, Rade as your draft pick for this year, quote unquote, then you can re-sign three of those four. The three I would do is probably Vince, Zach, and Jam. But I could hear arguments for TA. I think you bring those guys back because you have bird rights on them, or you have the right to match a contract offer if it's Jamichael. You have those opportunities to bring them back, and they can go over the cap with that. So it just makes sense to bring back at least three of those guys, probably three of those guys. And if you make a trade to get that front court a little bit less log jammed and you don't take on extra salary, I'd have to double check, but you're pretty close to having the full mid-level exception and being right up against the luxury tax. And that puts you in play for guys like Sean Livingston. That puts you in play for guys like Tyreke Evans, who maybe gets a little bit less because of injury concerns. That puts you in play for these players. Yeah, exactly. P.J. Tucker's another example who could play the four and be more of that small ball four that you'd be looking for, plus a good perimeter defender. So that puts you in the ballpark for those guys, and they would be better contributors for this team as presently constructed than Brandon Wright. When Brandon Wright was signed, it was a terrific contract. It's still a terrific contract. That's part of the reason he has a deal, or he has value. He's a good basketball player. But with Deontay Davis waiting in the wings, to me, I would rather have Davis be the fourth big next year than Brandon Wright, just because of the potential that he has in that spot. He makes less money. You ship out Brandon Wright, and that can maybe free you up to bring in another ball handler on the perimeter, bring in another wing who can maybe play the four a little bit in small ball situations, maybe even Chandler Parsons insurance if you're unsure of his health. P.J. Tucker could fill that role. Something along those lines is kind of what I would hope they would do, and we'll definitely talk more about that as the off season gets underway. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us this season on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. It's been our most successful season yet. Much appreciated. I'd like to thank everybody who's been a guest this season along the way. I'd like to thank everyone who has contributed to making the show whatever it may be, whatever part of the Grizzlies experience it is. Thanks to everyone who has assisted with that. Thanks to Brandon for coming on as my co-host here a few weeks ago. He's done a terrific job. And I'll let Brandon kind of wrap it up here in a minute as well. Just thanks. It's been a great year. Really enjoyed watching this team. It was much more enjoyable. It's always good to keep perspective, Brandon. You think back to that team that had Jordan Farmar and Ryan Holland starting on it. You don't like losing playoff series, but at least you lost with your two best players having an opportunity to compete and put you in a position to have a chance to win. Last year, it was hopeless. There was no hope. It was dark and dreary this year, at least you saw signs and flashes of possible better things to come if they make the right decisions in the offseason, which is, you know, very debatable what is right and wrong at this point. That's part of what makes it so fascinating.
Oh, definitely. And this is, I started covering the team with GVB last year, probably around the time Fizdale got hired. So this has been like my first full year, full season with the blog and covering, and I've really enjoyed it. I've gotten to work with a lot of like great writers. And I really enjoyed being able to be a part of both like just the blog, the Twitter community, and then being able to come on the show with you. So I've had a great season, and I know it didn't end the way that we wanted it to, but it was great to be a part of people's fan experience and be, you know, just help them to enjoy the games more and sort of add to the conversation this way. So I'm really thankful that I was able to help with the blog and everything. And so I just want to say thanks to everyone who's listened or read or interacted with us like throughout the season.
Agreed. I think that a thanks to you, like I said, for coming on to be the co-host. You've done a terrific job. Your first full year at the blog, remarkable work. You're one of the guys that I know I can count on. You do your job. You do what you're supposed to do. Great post, great content. I know next week you have your Grizzlies Prince playlist. That'll be interesting. Purple Grizz perhaps can be the title of that series that you have coming out next week. The off season is a great time for experimentation with writing and podcasting and that sort of thing, and I think you're going to take full advantage of that. I look forward to reading that work, and I look forward to continuing to work with you, Brandon, as we move forward through the off season and into the 2017-2018 campaign. Thanks again to all of our guests this season on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Thanks again to GrizzEssentials.net. And thanks to you, the listener, however you enjoy us, whether it's on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, on GBB.com itself, GrizzlyBearBlues.com. However you listen, however you partake in the GBB Live experience, it is appreciated more than you will ever know. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, which is tentatively June 7th, Wednesday, June 7th, a little more than a month from now, Grizzly Bear Blues Live is going on hiatus until that point. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, for Brandon Connor, I am Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.